Hello, podcasters. It's Monday, and holy cow, it was like a crap storm over the weekend. The media was just throwing crap at everything. First of all, we talk a little bit about Ben Shapiro. Yeah, I don't know if you know this. He's pro-Hitler. Unbelievable stuff. We'll talk about that, give you the audio that caused the stir. Also, Graham Allen joins us. He was in a crap storm. Did you know Graham Allen, who is a host here at Blaze TV, how racist he is?
Oh, I sure do.
And hates little girls, too.
Apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's a misogynist racist who just is furthering the Southern gun culture. Unbelievable, that story. And, of course, we have the Women's March, which was out of control, anti-Semitic. Of course, you never really heard much about that. And the big story, we have a woman, I don't even feel comfortable even giving her name anymore. We have a woman who was a chaperone from Covington High School. She tells us what really happened with that Catholic school trip in Washington, D.C. It's an amazing story. Just a side note, after the interview, I asked her to stay on. We spoke for about 15 minutes. People were coming to her door, and she is, they all are, a little afraid for what is happening next. We follow that story. You don't want to miss a second of today's episode, and you can find it right now, today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
By the way, our sponsor is Home Title Lock.
Mm-hmm.
Home Title Lock is a great company because they are the only ones who can do something. I think when you find a company that is the only one that can solve a problem, this is a good company to be in business with. It's a good company to sign up for.
This is one that we didn't even know this thing existed. FBI says it's the fastest growing crime. You know, and cybercrime is big, but this is not cybercrime. This is old fashioned crime. They're actually not stealing the stuff in your house. They're stealing your house, and they have to do it with paper.
Yeah.
And they go down and they file the paperwork, and it's like $40. You forge a signature, and you're done. And you have the house. You please check to see if your parents have been crimes of this, if you are a crime of this. Only one company can stop it. It's HomeTitleLock.com. $100 search for free to make sure you haven't already been victimized. HomeTitleLock.com. Do it now.
Seems like a difficult thing to get into is what I'm saying. I mean, I'd just be... Maybe it's...
I'll give it a day. I'll give it a day. I want you to hear the whole argument. I think I can make the whole argument. I think I can make the whole argument.
I would like to hear it in more than 10 seconds.
You want to do it now?
Well, no. You said you were going to take a day. I would like to hear a more than 10-second thought-out version of that argument.
All right. I won't say it today. I will say it tomorrow. Here's the... I'm going to say it anyway. I just know it. I can feel it in me. All right. Let's just look at the weekend. What happened? We had Ben Shapiro, a good friend of ours, say something about pro-life and pro-life people. It was taken out of context. It was run up every flagpole, and he actually lost sponsors because of a statement that he made. And here it is. He made the statement, the pro-life statement, that, you know, the guys who are standing up for pro-life, they believe in life. They wouldn't have even killed Hitler as a baby. Oh, my gosh. That's horrible. They wouldn't have even killed Hitler. No, they, as he went on to say, they would have said, let's put him in a good home. Let's give him good parents. You know, if you could go back in a time machine, would you kill Hitler? No, we don't kill innocent babies.
And we don't kill people who have not yet committed crimes either.
Right. What are we, Minority Report? How is this controversial? First of all, he's Jewish.
He's also the victim of the most anti-Semitic attacks in the entire media. The argument is what? He's pro-Hitler? I mean, how stupid do you have to be to believe these things?
So there's strike one. There's strike one. Strike two. Actually, that should be strike three, strike two, because I want to count up, counting them up to the biggest outrage of the weekend. Strike two is the Women's March. So the Women's March happens this weekend, and they actually get on stage, and they are actually saying anti-Semitic things. Now, we have said long ago, you don't know who these people are. You don't know who these people are. Look at who they are. We've been saying this from the beginning. You have a women's march led by these people. You don't want to be in bed with those people. Oh, we were crazy. They were the greatest leaders, literally the greatest leaders in the world, named by Fortune magazine. The greatest leaders in the world. Well, now the left has decided, I shouldn't say the left, now the Democrats are starting to say, these guys are really anti-Semites. They're really, really bad. And why are they saying that? Not because we're saying it, because we have them on tape saying it, sitting while it's being said, and then defending what was said while they were sitting. It's crazy. So the whole thing starts to shimmy apart. The Democrats start to run for their lives. And what do the Women's March do? They get up and they say more anti-Semitic things. And the media says nothing. Okay, wait a minute. Ben Shapiro saying that the pro-life people have such ethics that they believe that innocence is at birth, that babies are innocent and they shouldn't be killed, and they believe that so much they wouldn't even kill baby Hitler. That is a normal human being thing to say. That is like how many crappy sci-fi shows are on it's almost like it could be a Star Trek where we've got, oh my gosh, we found ourselves in a time tunnel and all of a sudden we're back in 1939. Doctor Who has done this. Everybody has done this. We don't kill innocent children is always the conclusion. So the anti-Semites saying anti-Semitic things gets nothing. Ben Shapiro saying non-anti-Semitic things is basically called an anti-Semite for sticking up for babies. Baby Hitler. Unfrickin' believable. And now to the number one outrage of the weekend. Oh, yeah. The number one outrage of the weekend has to be the kids from just across the water at Cincinnati, from the Catholic school, who are, in my opinion, Martin frickin' Luther King. These kids are amazing kids. What? They were mocking a Native American? No, they weren't. No, they weren't. First of all, this particular Native American has a history of doing these things. These were professionals going up a bunch of kids, and the kids acted admirably. Okay, so let me just give you this. I'm going to give you all of the tape to prove all of these things. First of all, what we have is the picture of the kid looking defiant, sneering at the poor old Vietnam veteran Native American with his drum. All he was doing was playing his drum. And look at the sneer on this face. Well, if you happen to watch all of the videotape, and you could spend about 2 hours, I spent about 45 minutes watching it, you kind of come back with a different impression. First of all, the Native American walked up to the kid. Okay? The kid wasn't blocking his way. The group of Native Americans walked up to the group of kids, intentionally trying to antagonize them. You don't believe me? Well, let me just give you a couple of things. They were yelling, "These are babies made out of incest." The boy ran down the steps. "You can't see the angels around us," a black man said. "You all have one N-word in the crowd. Your president, homosexuals." These kids, as I will show you with the audio, these kids held their ground. This kid, I watched the entire confrontation with the kid that is now famous, his face. This kid stood there just to say, "You don't intimidate me." Because that's what the Native American group was trying to do. They were saying, "You don't belong here. Go back to Europe." All of these things. Can you imagine? Go back to Mexico. That's what you were supposed to hear. Gee, build that wall. Never happened. Never happened. They weren't chanting that. Instead, the Native Americans were saying to the white kids, "Go back to Europe." They didn't report that. So what happened? They marched up. They were trying to get them to swing. And that kid would not swing. He smiled once, probably because he was in a stare down with an old Native American who was beating a drum. And he had to have thought to himself at one point, "This guy's an adult. This is ridiculous. I'm standing on the stage. I'm just here in Washington. We're getting ready to go home. And I'm standing here with this guy and all of these people screaming at us. This is crazy." And you hear many of the videotapes, people in the crowd going, "What the hell is going on?" The boys, the Catholic boys going, "What is going on?" Because they were all of a sudden under attack. I'm going to play the audio when we come back of one of the kids actually engaging because another Native American starts calling him names. And so he starts using reason. And that's when the boy in the photo breaks. Oh my gosh. All you had to do was watch about 2 minutes of tape, but that was too much for the mainstream media to do. These kids are Martin Luther King, and do we need to remind you who he was?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Yeah, you know it's Martin Luther King Day today. Yeah. You know that the press is going to just twist what you say. And I don't think they care anymore. I really don't.
I think they like the idea of these kids who've been vilified by the country as essentially white supremacists with no evidence of it.
No evidence whatsoever.
The idea that you're going to say that they had similar characteristics in some ways to Martin Luther King is on Martin Luther King Day.
Well, I don't even think the press even knows who Martin Luther King is anymore. I mean, he's not radical enough for people now. Martin Luther King is being distanced from all of the, you know, the big civil rights groups now. Only when it's convenient for them do they use it. Martin Luther King wouldn't be a part of Antifa. No way.
No.
Martin Luther King wouldn't be a part of he wouldn't be a part of the Women's March. Maybe at the beginning he would have been, okay, let's, you know, gather together. It seemed like a peaceful march, but he probably would have done his homework and saw who was involved and went, no, they seem to be racists. And I don't think we want to stand with racists. He wouldn't be standing with them now.
Would he be at the March for Life? We don't know, but I know Alveda King says that he actually was pro-life, right? I mean,
he was also, dare I say it, on Martin Luther King Day? Yes, I dare. Also pro-gun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? You know what's crazy? Because gun laws for African Americans and Native
Americans.
Common
sense gun control laws.
Common sense
Glenn,
gun
here.
Control mm-hmm. laws. They were always in effect in the South for African Americans.
Yeah, common sense. We don't want African Americans to have
guns.
Of course
not.
Gosh,
why? You know why? This is why they told Martin Luther King he couldn't have a gun. Because he went in and he said, "Hey, I need to get a permit to carry a gun." And they said, no, that'll make it more dangerous for you.
For you. We're
for
doing
you.
It
We're doing
for
you.
Just like they're protecting us with their gun control measures of today. Yeah. We so, can't understand how to handle these big black metal scary things that we hold and make loud booms. We can't do that ourselves.
We're doing this for your own good. You can't carry a gun, Mr. King. So, you know, he's not exactly the guy that everybody portrays him. And he wasn't a saint either. I mean, he was a normal guy. Yeah. None of our heroes of the past are perfect. He wasn't a saint. Towards the end, he was hanging around a lot of communists. You know, whether that's where he would have ended up or not, I don't know. But here's why we know him. Not because we're like, you know, I support Martin Luther King because he was for philandering. No, we like him because of his idea that you peacefully protest. Oh, I like Martin Luther King because he was a communist. No, we like Martin Luther King and he has a day because he taught America how to protest peacefully. And that's exactly what happened this weekend. But maybe we should look back and have a refresher on Martin Luther King.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Dr. Martin Luther King has been shot and wounded, possibly critically wounded, in Memphis, Tennessee this evening.
Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee.
An all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene.
For centuries, man's freedom has been crushed, contained, or at best discouraged, and sometimes in subtle ways. In the days of Solomon, he decried that man could learn too much, that one shouldn't dig too deeply nor read too often, saying that too much reading led to the weariness of the flesh, that the search for knowledge is where Adam and Eve went wrong, thus proving that learning leads to man's downfall or his sin. St. Paul, centuries later, said basically the same thing. In 1500, Francis Bacon wrote to the king, trying to convince him that man could never learn too much, that knowledge could not somehow also contain the serpent. Yet free thought continued to be squashed. Immanuel Kant, the man who first described the Milky Way as a collection of suns in the fashion that we now know it, wrote in 1760, "There are many things that I believe that I shall never say, but I shall never say the things that I do not believe." The courage to speak one's mind. In 1760, our most precious freedom, the freedom of thought, had not yet been born. Yet, just a few years later, on the other side of the globe, sat a man alone in a hotel room, his wife dying in bed hundreds of miles away from him. As he scratched words on paper, "We find these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, with certain unalienable rights given to them by their Creator, among them life, liberty, and property." It was later changed to "the pursuit of happiness" to make sure the slave trade would finally come to an end.
I'm not sure if we really understand the impact of those words. Man has never been as free to think as man is now. The Chinese dissidents didn't make a Statue of Liberty in Tiananmen Square out of happenstance. Americans changed the world. Our freedom of thought allowed men to discover electricity, the light bulb, the car, the phone, the motion picture, the radio, the television, the computer, to put a man on the moon.
Which of these men will be first to orbit the Earth, I cannot tell you.
And a spacecraft on Mars.
Touchdown confirmed. Receive on Mars.
It was in the American century that the theory of relativity was conceived, leading Einstein to say, "The thing that strikes me about America is the joyous, positive attitude to life. The smile on the faces of the people is one of the greatest assets of the American. He's friendly, self-confident, optimistic, and without envy. The American lives more for his goals, for the future. Life for him is always becoming, never being. His emphasis is laid on the we and never the I." So today, as we are free to celebrate, relax, think, read, say anything, ask yourself this: are we still more about the goals for the future? Is life for us always about becoming and never being? And are we still part of the we and not the I? You know, when Jefferson first wrote those words, they were words of treason and certain execution. But today they are free to echo throughout the land as words of the American spirit and our hope that we do hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and among them, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And in support of this declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Our founders changed the world with those few words. And over 200 years later, a black preacher from the South, Dr. Martin Luther King, helped make sure that the promise of liberty was real for all Americans. Free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last. Thank God Almighty.
Thank God Almighty.
We are free at last.
We are free at last.
All office chairs are not the same.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Patriot Mobile is a phone service that will give you all of the great coverage that you want. They're just not going to take the money from you and then invest that in causes that you don't believe in, like Planned Parenthood. Patriot Mobile actually is going to let you invest your money into the causes that you believe in. But most of these cell companies, they give all kinds of money to crazy, crazy causes that you work hard against.
It's true. Why do that? You can go with Patriot Mobile. They were created to solve that problem. They're the only conservative cell phone company in America. Go to patriotmobile.com/blaze. Get started today. When you use the offer code blaze, they're going to waive the activation fee for up to two lines. patriotmobile.com/blaze or 1-800-A-PATRIOT is the place to go.
We were just talking about Abraham Lincoln, and I sent some guys up to the vault to get this a really rare and controversial photograph of Abraham Lincoln. And I think that it looks, Lincoln looks like Kramer on Seinfeld. That's not why it's controversial, but doesn't he?
It totally does, yeah.
Can you, do you have a picture of it side by side by any chance? grab a picture of Kramer and grab this picture of Abraham Lincoln. This picture was taken on July 4th, 1856. Any idea why that is an important date?
I don't know.
They grabbed him just before he walked up onto the podium for the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Oh, wow.
This is the Abraham Lincoln that gave that debate. And he won. I mean, looking like this, he won.
A little different than the classic photos you'd think of when you think of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, isn't that nuts?
That one's not going on the $5 bill.
No, that's not good. That's not even going on a $3 bill.
No.
That's just a bad looking picture of Abraham Lincoln. You know, Abraham Lincoln was in a bad mood if you ever see him with his hair combed. Any picture where his hair is in place, it's because he was pissed off.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. His way of taking out his anger was on his hair?
No. Mm-hmm. He would sit for a photo and they would say, Mr. President, we'd just like to comb your hair. Mr. Lincoln, could we just comb your hair? And he'd say, no, I like it this way. And they would say, no, Mr. Lincoln, we really need you to comb your hair. No, I like it this way. Mr. Lincoln, please. Okay, go ahead, comb it. And as they'd finish and they'd get right to the camera ready to take the shot, he'd run his hands through his hair and mess it up again and do it right. And he's like, go ahead, take the picture now. And they would all laugh and they would take the picture. A few times they were like, no, Mr. President. And he was pissed. He did not like pictures making him look all fancy. Fancy, in his term, was with my hair combed, because he never combed his hair. That's not what he looked like. He looked like more like this. He looked like he was disheveled all the time. Here's the side by side. Look at that. That is a Kramer haircut. That is the original Kramer. Look at that. The nose is even the same. Wouldn't it be cool if Abraham Lincoln walked into rooms like Kramer? Just kind of slid into rooms. Whoa. Oh. All right. I say we free the slaves. What do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Someone should remake in Seinfeld style elements of the Lincoln presidency. That would be incredible.
Man,
with like Lincoln popping in.
Somebody who had a movie studio.
I would love that.
That'd be great.
Like, the wife could be Elaine. Coming in.
Wouldn't
you imagine
funny?
The characters that you could have in that?
And he would be like, we should free the slaves. And like Elaine used to always do, she'd come up to him and push him.
Yeah.
Stop it. That's
out.
A great idea.
This is Hamilton 2. The money's there. People want to see
it is. No
rewritten
song.
History.
You just do Kramer is Lincoln. And you get the old cast back from Seinfeld.
Oh, my gosh. This is brilliant. Lin-Manuel Miranda should be coming in and doing
that
this.
That is
except,
really good.
Okay, I don't know what that history would look like. But that is that's a billion-dollar musical for you right
that
there.
That is fantastic. What happened to Kramer? Did anybody know? I mean, I know he went off on like a racist rant at one point.
There was an issue at a comedy club. Yes,
right.
Where he was. It was. I mean, if you think about
that was a bad one.
One of the earliest sort of YouTube moments that affected somebody's career that I can think of. Yeah, he went in. I mean, it was a very bad moment, as he's admitted many times since.
Yeah.
He was being taunted by someone in the crowd who happened to be African-American, and he was looking for a way to get under his skin and decided to use words you do not use in that fashion. He's actually recovered from that at some point with a gigantic assist to Jerry Seinfeld, who has so much credibility with everybody, and he kept going on the air and saying, look, you know, he's put him on as big appearances. He's put him back in shows that he's done.
Yeah.
He was on Curb Your Enthusiasm a few times. He's come back at some level from that.
He is funny. We're watching Seinfeld with the kids now, you know. We finished watching Cosby, and so they have their fill of a pedophile.
And now you're going into the racists.
Yeah, now we're going into the racists. No, so we're watching Seinfeld. A lot funnier. I mean, I've always thought it was funny. It's a lot funnier than I remember. They're absolutely dislikable. I mean, you got that the first time around, but they really are all so shallow and dislikable, which is the first time a sitcom was like that. Mm-hmm. There was no sitcoms before that had the entire cast, except for the crazy neighbor, unlikable.
Right.
Kramer is likable.
Yeah.
In a crazy
in
sort
a crazy
of way.
Way
he's
yeah.
the guy who is always like, no, that's not right. You know?
Yeah. He's also, you know, insane.
Yeah, he's insane.
But, yeah, you're right.
The I saw an episode, though. Do you remember the Indian cigar episode?
Yeah.
Go back and watch that now. It's unfreaking believable.
Well, do you remember we did this couple weeks ago? There's a new list of the 10 Seinfeld episodes that are no longer the worst moments.
Here.
I mean, maybe that was when Pat was here.
Yeah.
And it was, I can't remember what the other controversy was. There was another like old TV show controversy and we went over this list and these moments, you know, there's a lot of them in that show that couldn't be made today. I mean, even going back to more recent history of The Office, Steve Carell said in an interview, you couldn't make that show today.
There was an article out.
Unbelievable.
There was an article out yesterday or today about how stand-up comedy is dead. And I'm like, no, it's really not. It's not dead. It's just dead for this generation.
No, I mean.
Because nobody can take a joke. It will, with what was it? With Terror and Slaughter Return.
Yeah.
The gods of the copybook headings are coming back. And so stand-up comedy will come back. It's just going to be after a nasty episode here.
It's interesting you say that. I was the Louis C.K. thing recently has had me thinking about this a lot because he had this apparently terrible moment where he was, you know, bashing the Parkland victims. And he was saying that, he was saying that it's almost like they're trying to be treated as royalty, these people who are demanding you call them what they say they want to be called. And he was just kind of mocking culture mm-hmm. and everyone was bashing mm-hmm. him for it. And I happened to hear Jim Norton, who's a, you know, great comedian and like a, you know, First Amendment hero, who's always speaking out for the First Amendment. And he talked about this and his take was it's never going to change. It is never going back. It's never going to go back to a time where people actually took the joke. It's never going to go back to a time where people weren't offended over every single thing. His take was never. And that's depressing because there's a part of me that was optimistic about the idea of social media and all these things and that mm-hmm. when we were one of the first sort of targets in this world, mm-hmm. right? Like this show would get targeted by, you know, stupid groups like Media Matters and everything.
This show used to be funny. Believe it or not, this show used to be funny. I mean, that was our main goal, was to be funny every day. Then our main goal was just stay on the air.
Well,
weather the storm. And we got so attacked from all sides over and over and over again. It was really hard for a long period of time to still say what I believe.
Yeah. I mean, you still did it. And we had problems from it, right? Constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
And my take at the time was this was new to people. Like these, like a company, right? Used to get 10 complaint letters a year, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they get 100 emails in a day about the same thing. And in their minds, it would turn into, oh my gosh, this is worse than we've ever seen before. We have to bail from this sponsor or we have to, stop advertising on that show or whatever the change was. We have to make a statement to show that we are not on the side of these hateful things, whatever they were. I'm not going to check. And my initial thought on that was people would eventually realize that these are mailing lists, right? This is before social media, really. It was more like the mailing lists and emails. And I was like, these are mailing lists. This is just like, it's a dumb activism group that's just, they're fraudulently showing outrage to try to get you to hurt their enemy politically. And I thought eventually companies would be like, oh, I mean, we've seen this 1,000 times. This is idiotic. I'm not getting involved in this. You know what? We don't back anybody's show that we advertise on. It's not what we do here. We make pancakes or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And really, it's been the opposite. It's just now everyone folds over everything. The second, and this happens on the left and right. You know, people just, as soon as there's a complaint about something, look at the school yesterday with the MAGA hat kid. The mm-hmm. school that knows these particular children. Their immediate reaction was, we denounce everything they've ever done in their lives. And of course, now they're having to back off of this because the video clearly shows that there was no evidence to claims that they were bad kids.
Let me say, just because it's like lemon juice in an open wound on a leftist. No, Stu, they acted like Martin Luther King.
Right. They stood there and they did not yell at them. They did not fire back. They stood there silently, and they did. They protested in a restrained way. By all the video evidence we have right now,
they weren't even protesting.
They were just standing there.
They were standing waiting for the bus.
Exactly.
They were targeted by two professional groups of protesters.
Yeah.
They were targeted. Those guys on both of those groups, the what is it, African-American Jews or whatever it is, and the Native American protest group, they've never had this much publicity before. They've never had this, but they were targeted. That group was targeted to do exactly because they knew what the press would do.
And they milked it for everything that it was worth.
Absolutely.
Lied to the press, said things that happened.
And the press doesn't care that they were lied to.
They don't seem to be pissed off about it at all.
Nope.
And that's the thing. Like, I have... Over this time and going through this firsthand, we've dealt with this, you know, for now 15, 20 years. And it's like, you get the sense that maybe it is never going to change. Maybe we're at this point where we just won't joke anymore.
With terror and slaughter, the gods of the copybook headings will return. Read that poem again.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's just going to be horrible to get back to it. Let me just finish with telling you the story. In fact, would you write this down? I'm going to the prop storehouse today, or the prop storeroom that I have, and I am picking up the cigar store Indian that I have in storage, and I'm going to put it right there, right behind me, so every day it's sitting there. So this episode is so telling and shows where we are. And shows the right thing. America was laughing at this. But America was laughing at it because it tells the truth about America. He picks up, remember, he's offended Elaine, I think. And so he's standing, he's trying to get her, he wants to get her something. And he's standing in the cigar store and he's like, oh, that's great. That's so kitschy. That's cool because it's so kitschy. He's like, I get that. How much is that? And it was like $1,200, which is no way you could buy one now for that. It's $1,200 or something like that, $700. And he picks it up, he wraps it up, and he goes to Ellen's house. They're playing a card game or something. They're doing something as women. One of the women is a Native American. And Seinfeld walks in, and he's like, hello, Judy, or whatever her name is. And there's obviously some chemistry between the two. And which you couldn't do now, God forbid. He says, Ellen, I got you something. I've got you something. Look. And he starts to pull it off and pull off the cloth off of the cigar store Indian. And she's like, no, Jerry, don't. No, 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 no. And he's like, what? This is kitschy. This is fun. Look at this. This is great. He's doing it because it's kitschy and it's fun. And it is. It is. It's a part of history. And so he pulls it off, and he's doing it as a joke for her, okay? Mm-hmm. It's immediately turned into a racist thing. The Native American gets up, and he tries to apologize and says, I'm sorry, I didn't know, and if that was offensive, I'm really sorry. And then he says, you know, they get back together, and she gives him something, the Native American. And it's the Indian giver thing.
Right.
And then at the end, they're dating and he's like, hey, let's just I made an appointment at a great restaurant. So it shows how he's trying and taking it so far. What's her name? I want to say Ellen, but it's not
Elaine.
Elaine. Mm-hmm. Elaine then says to Kramer, get this out of here. I don't want this. He's like, oh, this is great. This is kitschy. This is great. So he puts it in a cab. As he's trying to find a restaurant that the two of them can go to, Jerry is, he says to a guy who's got his back to him, hey, do you know where a Chinese restaurant is? Postman, Chinese. Why, you think all Chinese people? No. Kramer drives by in the car going, look, Jerry. Woo, 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 woo.
Right, right.
None of it was racist. None of it was racist. But it shows exactly the world we live in now, where everything is interpreted.
Projected the future.
For the worst.
Yeah
it did.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Okay, so Graham Allen, who is he's got his own show here on Blaze TV. It's called Rant Nation. he's a you know, a former military guy, and he poses with his kids with guns. Oh my gosh, you would think that he had set the world on fire and poked the eyes out of babies. He got a lot of heat for it this weekend. Graham joins us now. Hello, Graham.
Hey, Glenn, what's going on, guys?
So now, in this picture with you and the kids, were you in the poppy field and you were all trying to go to sleep, or where were you exactly?
Well, we were, you know, we were in a cotton field that is literally across the street from my house here in rural Mississippi.
I had no idea you were so racist. You live across the street from a cotton field?
I do. And I'm so racist that people obviously don't understand cotton, that I miraculously made cotton grow 3 days ago in the middle of winter. Anyone that knows anything about cotton knows that that picture was obviously taken months ago.
Right. So why the controversy here? The guns, the cotton, well, the children, both. You're all white.
I think
the sky is blue. What was the problem?
It was a perfect storm. Yeah. I think it was a perfect storm. So it was in response to the Gillette ad, and you know, and the left and the right can go back and forth forever on this. You know, it was highly praised by the left. It was highly criticized by the right. I think it's got more dislikes on YouTube than it has likes. And so the left praised it because, you know, it speaks for anti-bullying, anti-sexual predator, et cetera. But the right saw it for what it really was. And what that ad really was, it was this undertone of, it's basically saying that that men, current generation men, are this problem within our society. Mm-hmm. And it was aimed towards younger males, saying that you basically need to grow up different to save our world from the current generation of men. So I thought, what better way to do it than to post with something that I have a very strong feeling, I don't know this for certain, but I have a very strong feeling that the people that made the Gillette ad are probably not pro-gun kind of people. Mm-hmm. And so I posted the photo and I said, hey, Gillette, does this offend you? If I could go back and change one thing, I would have added just one word and I would have said, does this also offend you? Because the biggest thing was, people were like, what in the world does guns have to do with the Gillette ad? Well, technically nothing. You know, guns didn't have anything, you know, directly to do with the Gillette ad, except that gun loving, Second Amendment supporting law, gun law abiding citizens are frowned upon this day and age by the left as, you know, as the problem. And so that was the, you know, that was the whole reason why I literally just selected, that was one of our family photos. Like, that was part of a whole group of photos that we took months ago, me and my family.
And so
that's it. You know, people give me a lot more credit for being this racist bigot than I think I deserve, because they were like, the racist undertones and the time it took to construct such a subliminal photo, you know, is staggering.
It's amazing how it's amazing how groupthink works. People will do this. People have done this for years, and Stu and I always joke about it. They'll come up and they'll say, oh, I was listening to what you were saying in that monologue, and I hear what you were saying. And you'd be like, oh, thank you very much. No, I get it. Oh, okay, thanks. No, yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying. What am I saying? Yeah, and they will come up with some elaborate thing that, you know, that's what you are really saying. And usually we're, by that point, so afraid of that person, we just go, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
hey,
right.
But let's keep that to ourselves now. Go away. We shouldn't be seen with each other ever again.
Well, that Glenn, and then the other big comment that I saw was, and I wanted to address this just really quick. You know, I do teach my children how to handle and respect firearms, because I believe that teaching children at a younger age to understand firearms, you remove the mystique around firearms, you get them comfortable to where they respect it. One of the big things was, why is my little girl in the photo not having, why does she not have a weapon? Am I a sexist? You know, is my little girl not allowed
Let me look at the, put the picture back up, because I think I'm right. Is she the youngest?
Yes, she's the gun. Yeah, she's four in this photo.
Right. I wouldn't let a four-year-old grab the gun either. How old is your son? Right. So, how old is the son? Five?
Seven and eight are my two boys.
Oh, my God.
And so the purpose of the photo, one, to just add the reality of it is I only had three guns in the truck when we drove across the street. So the purpose of the photo was kind of that stereotypical Southern, men protecting, the women that they cherish in their life and stuff. Mm. But also my little girl, we don't let her just handle rifles yet because she's just not there. She's just not there yet as far as being truly comfortable with a rifle. By the way, none of those weapons were loaded. Obviously, my kids just don't walk around with rifles,
Graham,
they're all locked
Graham,
up all
Graham,
the time.
Graham, you're on the Glenn Beck Show, not like Stephen Colbert. You don't have to say that. We know that.
You're right. But anyway, so that's the reality of it. My little girl didn't have a rifle because she was four at the time that picture was taken.
Unbelievable.
That is incredible. Graham, it's interesting to watch this because, you're tied to the Gillette thing, I think makes a lot of sense to me. Because, toxic masculinity, they would talk about firearm usage as an example of
yes,
that, right?
Would. Yes,
I mean,
would.
It really does tie in a roundabout sort of way.
Especially Southerners with guns.
Yeah, right. It's interesting, though, because I grew up in Connecticut. It was not a gun culture at all. And I think there's a lot of people around the country who look at kids handling guns and think only the worst, right? Like the only experience they would ever have with a kid holding a gun is a terrible story in the news where, a parent didn't have their gun put away properly and it was loaded and the kid got a handle of it. And that's the terrible news at 11 moment for them. I mean, the gap in understanding gun culture is so wide. How do you fill it?
I think that the Southern culture in general is doing a good job. I mean, I can only speak for people can only truly speak for their own, upbringings and their own personal influences and events in their life. The entire culture of people that I associate with, my family, my children, gun culture is just this way of life. We go hunting literally just about every day during hunting season. And it's not for trophy or sport. It's to teach our children, hey, we shot this deer because this deer provides food for our family. That is the reason that we go out and do this. Hey, a gun is for hunting or self-defense purposes. It's not to go out and showboat and everything like that. I think the Southern culture does a good job. We're just demonized for
it. Well, so here's the thing. You know who's not demonized that could very easily be demonized? And I tweeted this about you earlier today. Hey, New Yorkers, you let your 13-year-old get onto a subway by themselves to go to school? Yes, many do. Do you just drop your 7 or 8-year-old off on the corner, even though your school is like, 50 feet away? Are you kidding me? There's a lot of people who live in the center of the country that would go, wait. You let your 13-year-old on the subway of New York? Are you crazy?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not crazy.
Nobody would do that.
Right. But if you live in New York and you've raised your kids to be New Yorkers, it's not crazy. It's very easy to avoid bad things in New York. If you know where you are, you have your wits around you. The easiest way to be victimized in New York, walk around with a map. You walk around with a tourist map, you are a target. A 13-year-old kid who knows exactly what they're doing on the subway, knows exactly what they're doing on the streets, that is not the victim. The tourist is the victim.
Yeah, exactly. And I would think that the biggest issues that we have now and why gun culture and why the Gillette ad was so controversial is I think that we have it's not a gun problem. We don't really have this, there's not the vast majority of men walking around raping and pillaging through villages, that people like to portray that's going on. The vast majority, 99% of men are anti-bullying, we're anti-inequality, we're anti-sexual harassment or assault. Who are you really talking to? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the vast majority of conservatives And the vast majority of real men took offense to that ad.
Yep.
Nobody is against being kind to people. Nobody is against that. We're against this undertone that people are creating that men are a problem in society. And I think that's why we all got upset.
So, Graham, you can catch Graham on Blaze TV. It's Rant Nation. Graham Allen, you can follow him again, blazetv.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck and you'll get, $10 off or 10% off. It's the same thing. It's $100 a year. You subscribe for a year, you get $10 off. Do it now at just go to blazetv.com/Beck and see him. Graham, I think this all can be summarized with this. You said Gillette wanted to make a commercial that said, you guys, men, you got to grow up to be different than blah, blah, blah. I think the message that men will accept is, boys, you need to grow up because men are different than boys. All the things that everybody is excusing is boy behavior, not a right. behavior of a man. And exactly. men understand that. Thanks.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I'm a little disturbed here reading this article about Graham Allen. The last line said, Graham Allen did not return Yahoo Lifestyle's request for comment.
Shut up.
I mean, if you're not going to respond to Yahoo Lifestyle, I don't want to have any dealings with you whatsoever.
Oh my
if
gosh.
Yahoo Lifestyle asks, you answer, Graham.
Oh, my gosh. Ugh. Oh, my gosh.
And I hope Ben Shapiro knows this, too, because Yahoo Lifestyle may have reached out for comment from him, too.
Can we play the Ben Shapiro audio? This is what got Ben Shapiro basically called an anti-Semite. He's Jewish, by the way. Shapiro. Listen.
Finally, argument number 10. This one has become popular in recent years after the book Freakonomics came out. That argument is that abortion lowers the crime rate, right? That all the that what has lowered the crime rate traditionally has been killing all the would-be criminals. First of all, okay, that I don't know who's comfortable with the pre-crime version of humanity, where we get to decide before you're born whether you're likely to be a criminal and then abort you based on future criminal activity in which you have not participated. Right? The argument, I guess, here is that would you kill baby Hitler? And the truth is that no pro-life person on earth would kill baby Hitler. Right, because baby Hitler wasn't Hitler. Adult Hitler was Hitler. Baby Hitler was a baby. Right, what you presumably want to do with baby Hitler was take baby Hitler out of baby Hitler's house and move baby Hitler into a better house where he would not grow up to be Hitler. Right? That's the idea. But it is also true that the crime statistics do not even match up. Criminologist Barry Latzer points out that abortions became available in 1973 under Roe versus Wade. Those young people would go on to create a massive crime spike and the crack cocaine epidemic. But if you move forward 15 to 20 years, right, which that's when you would see the crime drop due to the abortion of babies. But there is no crime drop. You'd expect the absent babies, right, mm-hmm. the babies that were killed starting in 1973, not to be around carjacking people. But it turns out that people were still carjacking people 15 years after Roe v. Wade, 20 years after Roe v. Wade. The crime spike only began to drop in 1994, a solid 21 years after Roe v. Wade was actually put in place. That can't be due to abortion. Right, that's really due to additional policing. So it doesn't even match up statistically. Okay, now, in all of this discussion, I've refrained from discussing the Bible and religion. Now, one of the arguments that I've made is based on the Bible or religion. Now, the media will pretend that I didn't make any of these arguments, that it's all about the Bible and religion, because the left prefers to believe that religion is stupid and people who believe in religion are stupid, people who believe in God are idiots, and that's the reason why we prefer to protect the lives of the unborn. But we do have to recognize one religious root to every argument that I'm making, and that is the innate value of human life. That is a religiously based argument.
I mean, just a collection of great points on the topic.
Tell me how you get a defense of Hitler out of that.
I mean, it's implausible, obviously, because Ben Shapiro has been attacked by anti-Semites more than any journalist. This is not like me just saying it. It was a study done by anti-Semitic attacks on journalists in 2016, and he was attacked by more than any other journalist in existence. The idea that he could be some pro-Hitler guy or he's so fanatic that he would let the Holocaust happen to not let a woman have an abortion or whatever the accusation is, they're all absurd.
So let me tell you what's happening here and why these things are put out, and then they say, oh, I'm really sorry. Because it doesn't matter. The retraction doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The image is already in your head. So if you don't know Ben Shapiro and you hear that Ben Shapiro was defending Hitler by saying nobody should kill baby Hitler because he loves Hitler, and that's the spin you have, even if you hear a few days later that's not true, that is seared into your head because it's an outrageous statement and an outrageous position. So that's seared in your head. Remember, you don't really know Ben Shapiro. You're not really following Ben Shapiro. You don't really care about this. But you saw someplace. I read someplace that he's like a big anti-Semite. Okay. Mm-hmm. You get enough of those, you all of a sudden start to say, Ben Shapiro's just a bad guy. You don't know him. You've never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
You've never met him. You've never seen him. You don't know anything about him except all of the falsehoods that have been put out.
Yeah.
That's disinformation. Misinformation is a mistake. Misinformation is something. We made a mistake. Disinformation is intentionally put out there. There's no way any journalist or anyone could possibly make that claim based on that soundbite.
Yet they continued to report it. These activist groups went after his sponsors, all the typical crap that goes on, knowing that there was absolutely nothing controversial about that comment.
And you have to know the difference between misinformation and disinformation. What happened with the kids from Kentucky, that was disinformation. There were no mistakes made there. Journalists don't make those kinds of easy mistakes.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
I have to tell you, I have seen a lot of protesters. I've seen a lot of people act. I've seen crowds of adults act like morons on both sides. I've seen people make stupid mistakes. But I have yet to see, outside of perhaps the crowd that we had in Washington, D.C., I have yet to see a crowd of kids act as Christ-like as I saw these kids in Covington act. And if you read the letter of the main kid, Nick Sandman, who was the guy who was staring down the Native American? He wasn't. He was acting Christ-like. And you see it if you watch the video. I watched the videos. I didn't watch the clips. I watched the actual whole video. And you see they were targeted. He wasn't blocking anyone. He was not smirking and laughing. I would imagine that for a while there, he either got like the funeral giggles. I was an altar boy. Oh, I remember being taken back because I had my friend and I, we were altar boys at a funeral, and we got the giggles, and it wasn't because we wanted to, it was because we didn't want to, and man, we got chastised by the priest. It was not pretty. Anyway, I think he's just because he's smiling because of the absurdity of it, but if you watch the whole video, that's only a fraction of a second, and then he hears one of his classmates intelligently, not confronting, intelligently trying to argue with one of the Native American protesters who's calling them all kinds of names. And Nick actually tries to stop the kid. He's like, at one point, he's like, hey, don't. When his friend continues, that's when he turns around, grabs him and says, let's go. The kid was doing, on Martin Luther King Day, I am proud to say this is a group of kids that Martin Luther King would hold up as a great example, and everyone should do that. Now, we have Jill Hamlin on. She was a chaperone as they were waiting for the bus. They weren't protesting. They were just there waiting for the bus so they could go home. Jill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Glenn. Thank you.
I can't even imagine what you feel like. I am so upset, and I don't know any of the kids, and I wasn't there.
It was upsetting when it happened, and it's been even more upsetting to see the aftermath and just the torment these kids are going through and being so wrongly accused of something they did not do.
Tell me what the scene was, Jill.
As I know everybody's heard, this has been the meeting place at the Lincoln Memorial for yep. the boys to meet and get their buses. That is what we do every year.
And every year everybody does that because that's where the buses can make a circle. It's the only
exactly.
place where the buses can wait and pick people up from all over the country. That's where you meet. But go ahead.
Exactly. We had no idea that there was an Indigenous march that day. We were there for the March for Life, a peaceful march that we did. We met. We gathered on the steps because, as has been done in past years, the boys typically do their school cheer on the steps down below by the Lincoln Memorial. Once they were gathering, there were other people milling around. There were the Black Hebrew Israelites, mm-hmm. I think that's what they call themselves.
Yeah, well, I lived in New York for about 6 years, so I can tell you they're crazy. That's what we call them. When you live in New York and you pass them every day, you're like, oh, those crazy yes. people are across the street. We better cross the street. Go ahead.
Yes, they immediately, their eyes just darted over to the crowd of boys, and boom, they were the target immediately mm-hmm. from the get-go.
Yep.
People from their group started running around with cameras, jumping up on columns and just filming everything. And the boys just looked at each other like, why are they saying this to us? We've done nothing wrong. We haven't said anything. We haven't instigated anything. And the insults and the hatred that came out of the mouth of these people holding Bibles in their hands was disgusting.
Everybody, every journalist at every network has passed those guys on the streets of New York. They know exactly who they are. They know exactly the hateful, racist things that they say. And for the journalist in America to actually not give someone else the benefit of the doubt when they have firsthand experience on the streets of New York of those people, it's despicable. But go ahead.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, they just were in shock, as we all were. And so we just thought, you know, we're just going to stay together as our group on the steps, and we're going to ignore the insults. And then you have Nathan Phillips with his four or five people. He started, you know, he had been beating his drum, and the boys were all crowded around. I mean, we were all standing there. The chaperones were all around. It's unfortunate that people think we were nowhere to be found. But Nathan Phillips inserted himself into our group of boys.
Have you watched the video from them? Because I watched several videos from several different people on all sides. If you watch the video from the Native American point of view, they specifically mm-hmm. target your group. They specifically yes. approach your group because they say, look at all of those white Europeans, and they specifically yes. know what they're walking into.
Yes, they did. And he was not trying to defuse a situation. He made it worse. He made it worse because he wants the attention, and he has drugged this school and these boys and their reputations through the worst possible way that he could. And he did not defuse the situation. And everyone says, why didn't the boy move away? He couldn't. He was surrounded by his classmates. They were all standing there. And to your point earlier, he was afraid. He is a young man. He's not an adult. Most of these kids have never been confronted with this type of situation, and they shouldn't have been done that either by Nathan Phillips.
He said that all these people were calling names, blah, blah, blah. He was trying to defuse. This is your Catholic student trying to defuse. At one point, he said, I just felt that these adults were trying to use the kids, us kids, as a prop or something. I can't remember. He said it. He said it beautifully, and I can't find it. But he knew these kids, I repeat, kids, are being persecuted for actions they did not commit. It's truly horrifying. And he talks about how he was standing there with adults trying to provoke them. And he knew that's what was happening. Jill, can you hold on? I want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and continue our conversation.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.